Okay, well, thank you to the organizers for this opportunity to report to you on what's happening towards realizing the linear collider. This is the outline of what I will be describing for you. First of all, the physics case has been made. The international consensus has been put together, and the scope of the project is defined for building this machine. Then I will go through and tell you about the development of the technology, the selection of the technology, what's happening in terms of detector development and planning, working towards a collaboration, and then a brief report on the activities on the governmental side, working towards the agreements that are necessary to realize this. You may be aware that the JLC has been renamed the GLC for Global Linear Collider, and I found it awkward to go back and change everything that says JLC to GLC, so please just use those interchangeably. So as far as the support for the linear collider, there's a history behind this. The physics case for the linear collider has been clear to many people for years. And motivated by this, there's been a broad segment of the community joined together in support. And I list here a number of statements that have been made. Back in 99, there was an ICFA statement on the linear collider which recommended vigorous R&D to be ready in a few years. There's the URL for your reference. Of course, you recall at 2001 at Snowmass, there was a strong recommendation that came out for the expeditious production construction of linear collider. Then the subpanel report in 2002. And now we have a document called Understanding Matter, Energy, Space, and Time, the case for the E plus E minus linear collider, which was written a little over a year ago and has been signed on to by roughly 2,500 people. It's a little hard to know the exact number now because on the list there's actually a lot of duplications which we're trying to get to deal with. But it's something on the order of 2,500 signatories. And if you're interested in signing on to this, now's a good time because we plan to make this public release of this in a few weeks. And finally, just recently, Jonathan Dorfan, the ICFA chair, went back to the ACFA, ICFA, and HEPAP groups to get their reaffirmation of their commitment to this linear collider. So there's a strong worldwide support for this project. This statement, which the URL is here, please join in signing this, presents the unified vision of the physics case for the linear collider. It's given guidance to the International Linear Collider Steering Committee in defining the scope of the baseline facility so that there's a statement of what the community wants, and the accelerator builders can use that as guidance to make sure that they build what we want. And again, it's still possible to sign. This is an important time to sign on. What is the scope that we want for this machine? There have been two documents produced to define this scope. First, the U.S. Physics and Detectors Subcommittee of the steering group sat down and wrote up a scope document which went through and defined what we want in the linear collider, and I'll give you in the next transparency what those specifications were. That came out a year ago. And in the last year then, a committee in the international community composed of six people followed up on that with a unified statement from the international community as to what the scope should be. Here's the group that worked on the American Linear Collider specification list. And here are the specifications. Initial center mass energy, 500 GeV. An integrated luminosity of 500 inverse femtobarns within 4 years of the physics running, and corresponding to a approximate luminosity of 2 times 10 to the 34. Electron polarization of at least 80%, upgradable to about a TeV or more, capable of occasionally running down at the Z pole, accommodation for 2 experimental halls, and the probability of a beam crossing angle. So as I say, this was then followed up by a group consisting of these people, 2 from Asia, 2 from Europe, chaired by Rolf Hoyer, and 2 representatives from North America. This table, was released in November, and this table shows you on all of the different specifications how the international specifications compare to what the U.S. group had put together. There are not very many differences. They're sort of in the finer details. The baseline energy, of course, is the same, essentially, with a slight difference in the way they express the operation at the Z-pole. The integrated luminosity, 500 inverse femtobarns in both cases. The baseline energy quality is expressed a little differently. This issue of 0.1% energy precision and stability is something that actually has created some stir in trying to interpret what that actually means. And the polarization in the US document, it's stated 80% electrons and perhaps 60% as an upgrade for positrons. And you can see that it's similar in the international. The crossing angle issue and the IRs, in the international document, it's very clear specifying that two detectors are desirable at the beginning of operation. And then the upgrade to a TEV, E minus, E minus collisions are expressed slightly differently, and the gamma, gamma, E gamma collisions are essentially expressed differently, but more or less the same idea. Now, the technologies that are on the table for realizing this are the four that are listed here, basically. There's the two mature designs, which are the Tesla design based at DAISY, which is the superconducting technology, and the NLC design or JLC-X design, X-band design, which are based at SLAC and KEK using normal conducting technology. There's also a normal conducting technology which is more conventional, less challenging, using the C-band, which is known as JLCC, which is still being considered. And then finally, there's CLIC, which is a futuristic design, normal conducting, but uses a drive beam power source under development at CERN. So it's generally believed that the way of realizing the first stages of linear collider would be based on these mature designs. These have been studied in a number of, in two worldwide technical assessments. Back in 1994, there was a review committee that created this report looking at all the various technologies. And at that time, there was a fairly wide open discussion of not only the four that I just listed, but others as well. And then in 2001, ICFA requested a second report, created a new committee with the same chair that had done the original report, Greg Lowe. And this group was to assess the potential technical status of these four linear collider designs and the potentials for meeting the advertised parameters at the 500 GeV, first stage of the machine. They were directed to use common criteria, definitions, computer codes, et cetera, for these assessments. To assess the potential of each design for reaching higher energies above the 500 GeV initial point, and establish for each design the R&D work that remains to be done in the next few years, which is a very important outcome of this study, and then to suggest future areas for collaboration. Now, in doing this study, what they did over the course of about a year, group got together of the world experts on these accelerators, and they evaluated these different technologies, and they came up with items that they realized were needed, and they classified these as R1s, R2s, R3s, and R4s. The R1s are basically the R&D that are needed for feasibility demonstration of the machine. So these are the items that need the most urgent attention. The R2s are the R&D that are needed to finalize design choices and ensure reliability of the machine. These are things we need to do, but they're not as urgent and time critical. And of course, R3s and R4s come into the categories that eventually you need to do, R4 being the things you need for technical and cost optimization, which again serve as tasks that need to be worked on as we move forward towards actually starting construction. Well, here's a summary. If you go through the report and try to pick out, a number of people have done this, and I've seen a few different versions of this, and sometimes the numbers vary by plus or minus here or there, depending upon how you translate language into numbers. But this is roughly it. In the R1 category, and if you look at the two mature technologies, you have Tesla and the X-band. And Tesla has one R1, and the X-band has two. And these are where a lot of the attention is being focused. You look down the column, you can see that there's a lot of work to be done. But the executive summary concluded based on the evaluation of these committees is there are no insurmountable obstacles to building these machines, either the Tesla, the X-band, or even, well, of course, the C-band is a more conventional approach within the next few years. But this serves as a guide as to what effort, what work needs to be achieved over the next few years. So the R1s are clearly the most important and urgent tasks. On the Tesla side, the R1 for them was the pertained to the upgrade to 800 GeV, which is the highest energy in the Tesla design. And in order to achieve that and to show that they could achieve that, it was decided by this report that they needed to build and test a complete power module at 35 megavolts per meter with the couplers and to really run this thing and measure the quenching rates and the dark current and so forth and show that this really was feasible. That was considered an R1 task. For the X-band, they were assigned two R1 requirements, and these particular are valid both at the startup 500 GeV and also at the upgrade energy of 1 GeV. The first one is to test a complete accelerator structure at the design gradient of 65 megavolts per meter unloaded and 50 megavolts per meter loaded, that is loaded with beam currents, with detuning and damping manifolds, couplers, and loads, including study of the breakdown of dark current. And then secondly, to show that their dual-moded SLED 2 pulse compression, which is what's required to get all of the power into the right time structure, can be achieved at the design power and energy handling levels. I won't go over the other since they're not competitive at this point. This shows you, related to the R1 for Tesla, the situation there as a function of time. It shows you their accelerating gradient. The theoretical limit is somewhere above 40 megavolts per meter. The goal for Tesla 500 is, I believe, 24 megavolts per meter and needed to go to 35 to get to Tesla 800. And you can see as a function of time, with improving the technology, they've gone up and surpassed this. But this committee judged that they needed to really put this all together into a cryo module, run it for extended time, and test it out. Unfortunately, I don't think DAISY is going to be able to carry out this particular task in the next coming months. On the R1s for the X-band technology, SLAC was able to achieve one of the two R1s recently. The very end of last year, here you can see the input power, the output power. The goal was to get all of this output power above 50 megawatts in this time pulse, and this was achieved basically in December of last year. So this is a great success, which reduces their R1s down to one. Now, this basis coming out of this now is being used by a new panel, which is going to make a technology recommendation. So the accelerator experts that produced this previous report were really, in some sense, the competitors who are working towards the realization of their favorite approach. A new committee of wise guys, or wise men, or however you want to characterize this group, has been created to look at the situation and make a recommendation on what the right way to go forward is. They have a schedule of meetings that's shown here. They've already met once at Rutherford Lab at the end of January. They'll be meeting very soon at DAISY, and then at the end of April, they'll meet at SLAC, and then in May, they'll be meeting at KK. This committee is chaired by Barry Barish. the charge for this International Technology Recommendation Panel is to recommend a linear collider technology to the International Linear Collider Steering Committee. The choice here should be between these two mature technologies, Tesla and JLC X-band. The C-band has been included it says here, incorporated, it should be evaluated. Then, based on all relevant scientific, technical, schedule, and cost considerations, which include this document I was just reporting to you on that has all the R1s and R2s and so forth, and the document, the earlier document that shows the case for the linear collider, which lays out some statements about what the physics is and what therefore what machine we need. And then they will hear presentations from the proponents addressing these issues, these various criteria. The agendas are being proved in advance to assure uniform coverage. They're asking for expert advice, and there's a group that are from the other proponents that are actually coming together with their meetings to give them the advice, and they'll be asking for input from the whole world. So here's just a list of how the various criteria are defined. We won't go through this, but there's the scientific criteria, which is the scope and parameters that we've been mentioning earlier, the technical criteria that we just talked, the schedule, looking at the approaches, how they would actually be able to realize their, and then of course the cost is very critical and important and needs to be understood. They'll be looking at all of these things. As I said, they're getting advice, and there's a formal group under the International Linear Collider Steering Committee known as the Accelerator Subcommittee, which is also chaired by Greg Lowe. And that again, is consists of many of the proponents on either of the sides. And so that group is there to inform this panel and give them the expertise they need. Because if you recognize the names on the panel, you'll realize that there isn't much accelerator expertise on the panel. They were advised to visit the sites, which, of course, in the schedule of their meetings I showed you, shows that they are going to all of the sites. And the presentation sessions are open. So if you happen to be around when any of these are taking place, you can go in and listen to the presentations. The hope is that the panel will come to a unanimous decision. This is going to be a difficult thing, but there is an urging that they try to work towards that. They are urged to come with a report as soon as possible. The firm deadline for this report is the end of this year. The hope is that they will achieve this well before that. They're working hard to come to an earlier date even. And then a full report will be available as soon as possible after these deliberations. The advisory group that I mentioned, the Accelerator Subcommittee, is shown here. You can see there's representations from all the labs. Greg Lowe is chair. And this committee is bringing to the Wise Person Committee the expertise that they do not personally have, so that they have the consultants on board to try to assess and evaluate all the various technical issues. Okay. Now, within the U.S. community, since the U.S. is desirous of building a linear collider in the U.S., independent of the technology choice, the U.S. Linear Collider Steering Group assigned a task to the Accelerator Subcommittee to do our own evaluation of the two different technologies. And this now, we believe, provides to the world community a comparison of a U.S.-based machine using either warm or cold technology. Basically, you see two technology options developed. A warm option, which is based on the NLC design of the NLC collaboration, and a cold option, which is similar to the Tesla design at DAISY, but is not the same as the Tesla design at DAISY. And a number of changes were made to the Tesla design based on the preferences by the accelerator physicists within the U.S. Both of these options meet the physics design requirements, which are guided by the U.S. physics scope document, because actually at the time this committee was meeting, that was the only thing that was available. The international scope document, as I emphasized earlier, doesn't differ much, but it only became available at the end of the work period of this group. And both options are being developed in concert, basically using as much as possible similar approaches in technical design for the accelerator systems that can be common to the two different designs in order to do a real comparison of where the differences really are. A common approach to the cost and schedule estimation methodology and risk reliability assessments. This study, this so-called technology option study, was completed by the end of 2003, right at the end of 2003, and it was taken to DAISY and KAK for review, and there were minor revisions that came out of those meetings at KAK and DAISY. That doesn't mean that they're fully accepted as the right solution by DAISY or KK, but the discussions resulted in some minor revisions. They were publicly released in March 18th, which is just a short time ago. And this whole report is now posted on the World Wide Web. It's a highly detailed and technically rich report with 475 pages. It fully lays out all of the issues that were evaluated and the choices that were made. And it's being made available to this technology recommendation panel during their deliberations. Now, it must be made clear that this report is not making a technical recommendation. It does find differences between the designs, and those are detailed and laid out, but it does not make a recommendation one way or the other. It's recognized that there are advantages in going either way. It makes a cost estimate, and it concludes that the cold cost is more expensive for the initial construction by a specific amount that's given in there with their estimated errors, uncertainties of that. And it's 25% plus or minus 10% more expensive to do the cold machine. No, it doesn't give that number. But I think you know that number, everyone knows the number, but they don't say it. Okay. Now, this option study, I mean, 475 pages is a lot. There's a lot in there. There's not been a formal transparency. I'm not part of the accelerator group. I understand a lot about it, we can talk about it, but I didn't feel comfortable just writing down my view of what the issues were. But we do have Jerry Dugan, who was chair of this committee, giving a webcast of this on April 8th. You can find out how to connect to this by going to the website that's listed here. He's also giving a seminar at Fermilab on April 15th on this. And then at Paris, he's been invited at the Linear Collider Workshop in Paris on April 19th to give an abbreviated talk on this, the idea being that by that time, people who are interested will have actually read some of this document. There's a nice executive summaries in there that you can look at to get the basic idea of what the conclusions were, and then you can there's some nice sections also that kind of show various tables of the differences and things. Okay, so turning to detector development and planning, most of you know about this, so perhaps it's not appropriate to even mention it, but some don't maybe. But there are studies going on in all three regions of the world related to linear collider physics. In Asia, it's the ACFA Joint Linear Collider Physics and Detector Working Group, which meets jointly about once a year. In Europe, there have been meetings about twice a year for quite a few years now. The current study is known as the ECFA study on physics and detectors for linear collider. And in North America, there's the American Linear Collider Physics Group, which meets regularly about twice a year now. And then we join together as a worldwide study, which links all of these groups together in a common pursuit of the physics and detectors for the linear collider. Here's some of the highlights of what's been going on detector R&D. We have subsystem working groups and the various groups that are pursuing the technologies that are needed for the detector subsystems. And we have organized an international R&D committee, which is trying to bridge across the world, bringing people together, pursuing the technologies on a common basis. And there's some good examples of this on TPC. This calorimeter collaboration known as CALIS, some silicon collaboration are examples of the international effort. Here's one important group on the physics side that's near and dear to the hearts of many people here. We have various studies going on that again involve worldwide efforts, linear collider LHC study, connections to cosmology, and then, of course, just the standard topics of Higgs, SUSY, and so forth. The regional meetings, just to give you a flavor of this, we met at SLAC in January. Last summer, we met at Cornell. ACFA met at Mumbai. ACFA met at Montpellier. And then in the worldwide workshops, those are happening about every 2 years. We're going to accelerate that a little bit to a year and a half. And the next meeting is in a few weeks in Paris on April 19th through the 23rd. The next ALCPG, American Linear Collider Physics Group meeting, is in Victoria on July 28th through the 31st, and I imagine that many of you will be there. I hope many of you will be there. I understand Luke Verrain is going to have a really big activity at that meeting, and that's really great. Victoria's almost as nice as Santa Barbara, especially in July, so look forward to seeing you there. Now, as far as the detector construction goes, here's a timetable that some people believe might barely be possible for realizing the linear collider, and that would be to have the machine and detector ready for operation at some time T, which we optimistically imagine, if we push very hard and get everyone convinced, we could do that by 2015. That means construction must begin at 2009, which is barely 5 years from now. And what's shown here is what we think needs to be done in order to realize the detector construction that could begin in 2009. R&D has been proceeding, but serious test beam work needs to begin with real prototypes in just a year or two, and technologies finalized designs and so forth working out. So basically, there's on this chart that was prepared by JU to illustrate this, there's a window of opportunity here, which leads us up to the start of construction. We are here, we're starting to eat into our window of opportunity. So we argue that there's an urgent need to really push this along. We've been having limited success with the funding agencies to get this going in the US, and we're continuing to push hard on it. Now, as the technology choice is made at the end of this year, there'll be a need to move towards forming a worldwide design group to take the chosen technology and move it forward. The International Linear Collider Steering Committee has established a task force to recommend how to best establish an internationally federated design group. And they would start a machine design as soon after the technology decision as possible. It'd be the first step towards internationally in the linear collider. And there's a committee, again, shown here of six people, known as the Zaki Committee, which has been working on this. There's a report that they've written up, circulating now to the regional steering groups in draft form. It should be released soon. And the idea here is to create a plan for putting together a central management group, which would consult probably something on the order of 20 people would be located in one location, and then reach out to the groups around the world that are helping work on this design. So this is a preparation that would allow us to go to a conventional design report and actually begin realizing the technical design report. There's also work going on realizing the organizations. There's the JLC globalization report. There's a report that was produced by a committee led by George Kalmus. And there's a related report in the US that essentially based on the Kalmus report with small regional differences, looking at various organizational matters to try to put together the structure of this complicated international enterprise. As far as governmental actions go, which are really important and a big hurdle, in the US, we believe there was a very significant step in the future facilities report that came out of the Office of Science. In that report, I quote, "The linear collider is the first priority among the midterm facilities." So that report has 28 facilities for science in the Office of Science plan. And it breaks those down into near-term facilities, mid-term, and long-term. And the mid-term facilities, linear collider, is at the top. Also, the Secretary of Energy's Task Force on the Future of Science Programs, has, chaired by Charles Vest, recommends a new major frontier research facility for the pursuit of basic science in the US. So we think this could very well fit the bill for the linear collider. There have been a number of meetings of the agency people looking at how they can help bring this about. And at the last OECD meeting in January of this year, there came out an important statement. This is the a statement which acknowledged the importance of a long-term vitality of high-energy physics. It saw the linear collider as a complement in expanding the discoveries of the LHC. It agreed on planning and implementation carried out on a global basis, and it basically believed this should be moved along, and stated one of the things that we've been arguing for being very important for this project is significant concurrent running with the LHC. This is a meeting of the science ministers in January, which was a follow-up to the report, which made this statement, actually. Now, let me just close with a statement about Loop Varain. The work of the Loop Varain effort is recognized by the full community as very important to the preparation for the Linear Collider. Strong, active interaction between this group and the rest of the Linear Collider community is important, and I hope that you'll be able, many of you or most of you will be able to come to Victoria to bring your results and your wisdom and your interests to that meeting. So I look forward to seeing you there. So in summary, I've tried to give you an overview of many things that have been happening. The past 2 years have seen many important advances towards realizing the Linear Collider. First of all, the steering groups were formed in all of the regions to help coordinate work. Then there was an international steering committee formed. We've defined our scope internationally, as I showed you. There's this very important consensus document. There's the evaluation of the technologies, and now the recommendation is coming along. We're beginning to plan a central design group. There's been the technology options comparison done by the U.S., and the Japanese have a similar study underway. And finally, we're getting attention at the governmental levels, which is an important hurdle, and that's beginning to happen. So many of the necessary steps are being taken, including the loop calculations. Thank you very much.
Questions. If you have questions, please wait for the microphone. I'm going to hop over, and everything here is recorded. So, Sven.
How do you see the chances that if the wise man committee really comes up with one recommendation, that then the rest of the community will really follow this, and not that the one of the groups would say, we just stick to our proposal and don't go with the others?
Well, I think that's the only solution. There's only one way to realize a linear collider, and that's if everyone goes together on it. So there's no other, it's either do that or we don't have a linear collider.
More questions?
I'd just like to comment on this point that recently there was a study of the future options for the SLAC program in the context of a global linear collider located not at SLAC but somewhere else. The study had an interesting conclusion that the SLAC effort would actually be equivalent whatever the technology choice. SLAC would be doing different things, but it would be involved to the same extent in the project whether it was warm or cold. So as far as SLAC is concerned, we're going with it warm or cold.
More questions? Dave? I'm going to do it this way around.
Dave's on sabbatical this term, so he can't ask me questions at Oregon.
You showed us the group's estimate of how much the cost difference would be between different estimates, and David Gross was trying to get out of you what the absolute value of the cost is. Do you have any sort of hints for us?
Well, we can talk afterwards about that. I should point out, though, that the cold machine actually has a lower operating cost. So it's more expensive to build. Once you run it, obviously, you start to win back on that. So this is one of the trade-offs that one has to evaluate. Superconducting, it just has a lower operating cost, yeah. It is more efficient. It's basically more efficient. It's more efficient, yeah. It takes a large number of years of operation to make it back, but it's, you know, trying to be balanced here. Fair and balanced is my approach.
More questions?
How long will the seed?
I mean, among all these, the Central Design Group is an international group.
Yeah.
But who are the people who are going to...
Well, the Marburger people and the OSTP people and these people are the ones from the U.S. who are discussing this at the level of the intergovernmental agreements. So this is happening, and this is where it has to be, right? And I think, ultimately, if this is going to happen in the U.S., it probably has to be a presidential initiative that this happen in the U.S.
It's just not clear who's going to take, you know, going to be pushing it.
Well, I agree. It's not clear at all.
Zoltan.
Just I would like to ask a question concerning LHC. So they presume the first physics results will be available at, from LHC 2009. So according to this plan, the final design will be fixed just after that or before or if some...
The final design would be, if that plan were realized, the final design, the construction would begin in 2009. Now there's quite a large amount of R&D and you know pre-construction work that has to be done. I would say roughly 20% of the project needs to be completed before you can actually do the construction.
Right.
So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and it needs to start and ramp up as soon as possible to actually be in a position to start in 2009. But that gives the opportunity of you know giving the sanity check in the sense that you know this is what we still want to do. But I think you once you start this, you're spending enough money in the front end that you're really on the path that says we're going to do it in 2009 or whenever we agree to. But so some people say why not wait till LHC? The point is that there's a lot of work that needs to be done before you're actually ready to start constructing.
So I think we have to move on now. So let's thank the speaker again.